Слава Україні!
Героям слава!
How have you been?
It's actually, I don't know, most of Europe right now, isn't it? Bank holiday, although it doesn't really, Easter holiday, it doesn't really change much for us Ukrainians, but somehow it feels...
What's a holiday?
I know, exactly. But somehow it feels, I don't know, everything else has stopped around us, so it's kind of, I don't know, kind of helpful in a way, maybe. I don't know. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely the same for Ukrainians who live abroad. There's always a bit of divorce from reality surrounding you. And as people went for their long weekends and, you know, enjoy themselves, which they totally should, you feel a bit even more isolated because no holidays for you. And we have to work and power through this. And by the way, it brings me actually to the topic that we discussed right before Spaces, and I want everyone else to know while we are connecting our featured Ukrainian today. We thought with Valeria how to experiment and how to try new things with Ukrainian Spaces, because as a Ukraine itself, Ukrainian Spaces is a work in progress, like everything else. And while we are passing 51st day of this genocide, a lot of people feel burnout, a lot of people feel a bit of fatigue, Ukrainians and allies as well. So we wanted to try one thing when we start our Ukrainian Spaces with something that might be called in the future like a Ukrainian booster or something like that, but we'll figure out. But the idea is simple. Me and Valeria will just share a couple of things that got us inspired, got us fired up, something that we saw on the internet or something that somebody told us, some stories and stuff like that. So, yeah, Valeria, do you want to go ahead or I'll do it?
I mean, the massive thing that everyone has been celebrating for the past, 24 hours more has been obviously the ship is the sinking of the ship of the Russian aggressor army. I think that has really shown the world what Ukraine can actually do, and that, you know, all the people who were wondering about how much Russia is progressing in this war, I think people are now thinking twice about it. So that's definitely been something that has made a lot of us Ukrainians kind of regain sort of hope and faith in, you know, in our future. And what about you?
Well, yeah, and this is something that launched thousands of memes as well, right? Including that CGI video I posted of this Moskva ship hitting Kremlin and hitting central Moscow, which was terrifying, but also weirdly therapeutical. But my other, you know, three best boosters that I have seen in the last couple of days since the last Ukrainian Spaces, well, the third one is going to be a post that one of our former guests, Maryam Nayem, did on so-called Oppression Olympics. This is something that I've been struggling for many, many months, maybe even years, but especially so in the last 51 day of genocide. Answering all those people who say stuff like, well, you know, why don't you protest against...
What about us?
Yeah, about this country and that country, and what would you do? And Maryam posted fantastic post on both Instagram and Twitter, and she says that others do not have such a platform does not mean that Ukrainians should be silent. The media coverage should stop and our partners should stop helping. Instead, the West needs to elevate the non-privileged voices and do more in those regions where help is needed. Despite the war, some Ukrainians are using their platforms to speak out. But she also posted this picture when she, on the first day after the full-scale invasion, she protested with the poster, Ukraine needs your help in Europe. And a woman on the street shouted at her, saying, what about Palestine? And she says, this is not a competition of who is suffering the most. helping Ukraine should not mean ignoring others. This is just another reason to unite. And this is, I feel was a very powerful argument for me that helped me actually to make my head a bit clearer. How should I respond to these? What about that?
Yeah.
What about the others things?
And the other thing, just to add to that, I think unexpectedly, something I posted a couple of days ago on Western Tigray went a little bit viral, I believe, with people who saw sort of the solidarity saying, like, you know, if you care about Ukraine, you should also care about what's happening in Western Tigray. And it's just really important, I think, also for us to just make sure that we're using our platforms to, you know, just because the world was doing things badly prior to Ukraine and they're changing how they're doing things now doesn't mean, you know, that they should continue doing things badly. So it's about, like, if we are able to show and say that, you know, as Ukrainians, we support people who are suffering all over the world, which is something actually, Maxim, our first ground rule was exactly about this for the spaces from day one, just to say that we acknowledge and understand and try to, you know, support people as much as we can, because we're obviously not the only ones experiencing war and genocide and whatnot. So super, super important. And I was going to say, I just thought of something. Something that was also quite inspiring. I know we spoke about this earlier before our spaces started, but I think a lot of the conversations that you've been leading and having around, you know, Russian colonialism, around the fact that it's genocide in Ukraine and so on and so forth, the language that you've been using and the narrative that you've been trying to make sure reaches the mainstream audiences, I am seeing it across the board, everywhere from government officials to media to people in general. Like, for example, Biden, you know, this week, I believe, referred to genocide and sort of things like that within Ukraine, which I think is really important for us from, like, even a narrative perspective, because we are fighting against a massive propaganda machine in as well as a massive army.
Absolutely. We will have another talk on Russian colonialism next week. So stick around with Ukrainian Spaces for more details. Just before we go into introducing our featured Ukrainian, couple of Ukraine boosters that I also saw. On my second favorite that I saw just before going on air, this is from one of the accounts that follows me. And I love Twitter for this because people share so many stories randomly. And this account at RuthTweetX shared a story under one of my posts. She writes, "I want to tell you a beautiful interaction today, USA. I talked with some woman about the war in history and my Ukrainian roots. One said, that's colonialism. Oh God, I'm Apache and Black. And when I see the news from Ukraine, I cry because I know I'm seeing what happened to my people." There with her kind friend, who's a cancer survivor, we three hugged and cried together and at the park while our kids climbed the playset. Me feeling pride and pain with my Ukrainian roots, shame for my colonialist Anglo-American roots, honored, grateful to connect with awesome people who care. How amazing is that? Just people sharing these stories with us.
And obviously social media has given us the ability to do so quickly and all over the world, which I think is something we're going to see more and more of as the time goes on. But totally agree. It's amazing.
Yeah. Okay, let's then continue. For those who are joining Ukrainian Spaces for the first time, I see some friends joining us every day, but we also have lots of folks who are joining for the first time. So here's a bit of info. What is Ukrainian Spaces? We created it together with Valeria to amplify Ukrainian voices and maybe a bit decolonize Ukraine conversations on Twitter. We're aware of millions of Ukrainians with perfect English sharing their stories across all social media platforms. Yet, unfortunately, the conversations about Ukraine in English are still dominated by Western, mostly white, mostly male folks. And not only it continuously robs Ukrainians of their agency, but it also perpetuates outdated, misleading, and false narratives about Ukraine and Ukrainians. So we want to foster a relaxed, safe and chill space for Ukrainian voices to express themselves without the need of fitting any Western boxes. And the rest can use the space to educate themselves and maybe a bit decolonize your views of Ukrainians and Ukraine. So each time we spend most of the hour offering the space to feature Ukrainians or a Ukrainian. Feel free to request speaker mic for questions, but please hold no grudges if we run out of time to open the floor for them. Just DM those questions or use and claim hashtag Ukrainian spaces to suggest us any questions or any topics, or just to share your beautiful stories. Super. So shall we introduce our featured Ukrainian for today?
Absolutely.
We will, we're excited to have Kate with us. I know, Kate, you're already a speaker. So can you tell us a bit quickly if you hear us and if the connection is fine?
Sure, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yay! Yes, perfect. We can hear you. So, Kate, our ground rule for Ukrainian Space is that we never introduce our featured Ukrainians. We want to allow them the freedom to introduce themselves, to tell them who they are, what their names, what they do, where they're coming from. But do you feel comfortable doing that? If so, you know, please go ahead and tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. And thank you again, guys, for inviting me. So I have to say I'm more honorary Ukrainian. I'm American born and raised. My husband is Ukrainian and I've lived here in Ukraine for almost 5 years now. I'm the editor-in-chief of Epophany magazine. Since 2017, we've been trying to publish as many interesting texts as possible from marginalized voices. By fate, it kind of became predominantly Ukrainian voices that we were publishing. And so I've done a lot to really promote Ukrainian literature in translation in the English-speaking world, and also to write about it, to champion the publication of Ukrainian books in Western presses. And yeah, that's my life. It was my life before the war, and it has become my life since the war started now, to promote it even on a larger scale.
Yeah. Well, as we, you know, you're one of the people, first people I reached out when we launched with Valeria Ukrainian Spaces, because I instantly thought of you, and not only because of fantastic work you do and how important you are and your voice for Ukraine conversations, but also because you represent something we talk a lot on these Ukrainian spaces and what it means to be Ukrainian. And as we emphasize over and over that being Ukrainian has nothing to do with ethnicity, geography, where you were born, but for many, a Ukrainian is a set of values and something many of us, including myself, for example, made a choice at some point to be, although I was born in Ukrainian, I didn't feel like Ukrainian, I wasn't proud of it for many years. So I know, I hope Valeria doesn't mind. I know that we ask this question at the end, but I really want to ask you this question right away. So for yourself, what it means to be Ukrainian, or how you feel about it, and has it changed, especially in the last several weeks of genocide in Ukraine?
I think it's a very interesting question, and one that I myself have contemplated very deeply since marrying a Ukrainian, and because, you know, ideally someday we will have children and they will also be Ukrainians. And for me, just this pride in traditions is absolutely incredible, in culture, and not just in terms of language, food, history. It's something that we don't have in the United States. We don't have really traditions that go back so far, like in Ukraine. And a deep pride in yourself, your family, your community, all of these things have become more and more important to me over the years. And I think that it's really something that I wouldn't have if I didn't call Ukraine my home.
Yeah, that's lovely. Valeria,
thank you. So, Kate, you already started talking about this a little bit around your work of elevating Ukrainian voices, in particular in literature. And I wanted to ask you, what has been sort of the driving force behind that? What was the need in doing that? And why did you decide that that was important, I guess, for Ukraine and for the world?
Yeah, sure. So even before the war, I thought that I saw that you have a lot of Western commentators who make rather strange statements about Ukraine, and these are so-called experts, especially when they talk about, you know, the Russian-speaking people of Ukraine or discrimination against Russian speakers. And it was all very strange to me. So as soon as the war started, I understood that it was critical to get as many Ukrainian voices out there into the English-speaking world as possible, because Ukrainian reality is very nuanced, complex, yet in a way also quite simple. You know, my husband, for example, he told me that as a child, he was predominantly speaking Russian in the west of Ukraine. By the way, there is the stereotype that Western Ukrainians only speak Ukrainian, but it's not true, especially in Chernivtsi. But he said, you know, like in school, like you would speak Russian, other kids would speak Ukrainian. There was never any problem of this sort of thing. So Ukrainians, as I saw and I wanted to show, a very tolerant country, very rich. Chernivtsi, again, it's always my go-to example, has a deep connection with the Romanian culture as well. You can walk down the street and hear conversations in Ukrainian, Russian, and Romanian on the same street. It's absolutely beautiful. So when this war started, I wanted to have Ukrainians explain how they were feeling, what it was like to experience this, especially in areas that were being hit, like Kharkiv, Kyiv. And I made the call to them. I said, please, whoever is in the safety, relative safety, who has peace of mind, please write what you're experiencing, what you're feeling. And we will find translators and we will get your message out there as soon as possible. And so this is what we did. It was absolutely incredible how many writers were responding. Olena Stiashkina, for example, she's originally from Donetsk. One of these writers who used to write in Russian, but after 2014 made the switch to Ukrainian. She volunteered to write. She was in Kyiv. She took a break, as she said, from making Molotov cocktails to sit at her computer and just to describe this rage that she was feeling, like really pure rage. And I can say that it's been most interesting to get the perspective of these writers from the east of Ukraine, because you know, they grew up where they had to speak Russian. They were speaking Russian more frequently, but they of course knew Ukrainian. It was taught in school, and they a lot of them, for not just Stiashkina, but Oleg Sentsov, Stanislav Aseyev, Volodymyr Rafayenko, Serhiy Zhidan, like all of them have made this conscious choice to communicate in Ukrainian language, which is quite interesting because you see, for example, writers like Paul Celan in history used to say that you can only express yourself artistically in your native tongue. For him as a German-speaking Jew, this was like a very complicated thing. But Ukrainian writers are showing like, even if Russian was your dominant language in school or in the family, that like you can choose to speak Ukrainian. It's not impossible to write eloquently, to express yourself eloquently in Ukrainian. And I really wanted these writers especially to convey this choice and how they celebrated it.
Absolutely. And this is something that hits home very close, because as I was growing up in Ukraine, especially in Eastern Ukraine, there is something that I was always missing in terms of Ukrainian literature and availability of Ukrainian books. And for many years, I remember when I was growing up, it was something that was assumed by default by the market that if you want to publish something in Ukrainian, this will not have the same impact as, say, in Russian. And Which leads me, you know, has changed dramatically in the last decade. But however, it leads me to the question about the dominance of Russian book market and publishing market that still had a head start right after the Soviet Union collapsed, dominated Ukrainian space for so many years. Russian books, you know, just disappeared. Russian made books disappeared just maybe several years ago completely from the market. Now we see this whole situation through colonialism lenses so clearly. Now, you know, you can easily answer the question why it happened. But what's your view regarding this and how the colonialism dynamic played out when it comes to recent Ukrainian literature? Maybe it's still, you know, before the genocide has been happening on some levels as well.
Really quickly, I just wanted to add a little more on the Ukrainian book market before the start of the invasion. It has to really be stressed that it was like a David versus Goliath scenario, because the Russian book market applies not only to Russia. So they're able to mass produce books that are offered at much cheaper prices. If you buy Ukrainian books, most of them are hardcovers. I have to say they're really works of art. The cover design is always, there are publishing houses like Vydavnictvo Starogo Leva that are really renowned for their beautiful covers. But these books are a luxury. You can spend like upwards of 250 hryvnia or more to purchase a book. This is really like not something that everybody can do. And before the start of the war, we can say like in 2020, for example, maybe like 57% of Ukrainians were not really buying books. I think that now, because of invasion, I read that 95% of publishing houses suffered really horrible financial losses because of the war. But still, they are trying to like donate as many books as possible, especially children's books, to the west of Ukraine to help refugees. And they are really like they are doing their best to survive. And it has to be said that in terms of like quantity versus quality, Ukrainian literature wins out with quality. And what do I mean by this? That you have just like an absolute thriving literary scene, that you have like every major city can boast many writers, many talented writers. Chernivtsi, Lviv, Kyiv, Kharkiv, Odessa. So when you think about recent literature, about the war, since 2014, over like 200 books have been published about the war since then. And this relates to like poetry, nonfiction, fiction. Some writers even went to fight in Donbass in 2015. Artem Chekh, for example, wrote about it in his book Tochka Nul, Absolute Zero, as it was published in English. And Serhii Zhedan, his incredible book, Internat, in English, it's called The Orphanage. It was published in English last year, I believe. And it's absolutely great because he shows psychologically this main character, who is a Ukrainian teacher in Donetsk, who only speaks Ukrainian in the classroom. And he's apolitical. He thinks that he has no agency whatsoever. And then when the war breaks out, he has to go rescue his nephew, who is in an orphanage in the occupied territory. And there's like this very interesting conversation in the book between the director of the orphanage, one of the cooks who stayed, and the main character. And the director, she's yelling at them, "You guys did nothing to stop this. You were passive citizens. You didn't take the chance to build your nation after independence." And this is kind of a great, I think, sociological insight that Zhedan shows about the situation in the country prior to 2014. Another book that is available now in English from Harvard University, Harvard's Ukrainian Research Institute, which is starting to do incredible work publishing historical texts, fiction, poetry, all genres. They published Volodymyr Rafayenko's Mondegreen, and it is almost kind of like almost autobiographical in a sense, because the main character, like Volodymyr Afanasenko, is from Donetsk and he's displaced by the war. And this book was the first book that Afanasenko wrote in Ukrainian. And he, as I understand, got into, like, Oleksandr Boychenko, famous literary critic from Chernivtsi, made some comments about Russian-speaking Ukrainian writers, and Volodymyr Afanasenko was so emotionally struck by this that he made the effort to write a book in Ukrainian just to change. So it was like very interesting to hear the backstory of this. And this book is about the psychological transformation he goes as an internally displaced person, as someone who is like going through war, trying to speak Ukrainian, but really like struggling to understand his identity in wartime when Russian becomes the language of the enemy. So really, Ukrainian literature has been acutely tied to this mm-hmm. war. And I think that in the coming years, it will be even more critical to understand it. Like if we think about Theodor Adorno's statement that there can be no poetry after Auschwitz, he's kind of talking about like Ceylon. But Ceylon's poetry was very interesting because it's like it broke down the Russian language, this language of barbarism, which for him was responsible for the death of his beloved parents. So like Ceylon's poetry really understood the horrors of the Holocaust if you read it. So I think it will be quite interesting to see which Ukrainian writers will take this upon them in the future and, to understand this genocide.
It is always off, you know, almost I'm really, you know, hesitant to interrupt you because you drop so many names. And I hope everyone else who listens to us is just taking notes intensely because these are all the names of, you know, a fantastic generation of modern Ukrainian writers who produce so much moving literature. But I wanted to ask you a bit of perspective question, because you mentioned that the war, of course, is going to be prominent, and genocide and the war will be prominent in Ukrainian literature for many years to come, probably. However, this is not the first time Ukraine is suffering such tragedy, because Ukraine has been under constant Russian colonialism attacks for many centuries. And this anti-colonial rigor and anti-colonial valor is something that walks through centuries of Ukrainian literature in general. So in your view, will it be a good opportunity for the rest of the world to unlock that treasure stove of Ukrainian literature that has always been very vocal about anti-colonial spirit?
Yeah, absolutely. I really hope that as these international publishing houses get interested in contemporary Ukrainian literature, that they don't forget the treasure trove that is classical Ukrainian literature, which I myself am, I feel, only starting to dive deeply into. I think one of the most common examples would be like the poetry of Taras Shevchenko. Yeah, he says in his poetry, like he's writing "Slava Ukraini," and you saw in recent years this kind of propaganda campaigns from useful idiots who say that "Slava Ukraini" is like a far right slogan when it's like it's not. That it is the slogan of Ukrainian national revival going back to the 19th century. So I think that one of the biggest problems is that the West doesn't understand how far back this conflict between Russia and Ukraine goes. You know, in this 19th century, for example, I was reading Honoré de Balzac, who went to Ukraine in the 19th century when it was part of the Russian Empire. He had a Polish wife who lived in Ukraine. She and her circle were unfortunately like very close to the Tsar, and Balzac viewed Ukraine through a very colonial lens. He thought like, oh, these peasants, they're so happy to live under the great Russian power, and you read these travelogues of his, and you're absolutely horrified. Especially so when you understand that Taras Shevchenko was in Ukraine around the same time. His freedom was bought because Shevchenko was born into slavery. This term serfdom, I think people don't really understand it. We have to say it for what it is. It was slavery. And Shevchenko's, I believe, grandparents, you know, not far back, were born free. So this is what makes it all the more incredible. But Shevchenko, while Balzac was singing the praises of the Tsar, who he said was charming, and that he says that the French and British empires can learn from Tsar Nicholas and to be more like Russia, God forbid, that at the same time, Shevchenko is saying like that Ukrainian girls, be careful of Russian men, Moskali, because they will not treat you right. They will abuse you, because this was a huge problem where soldiers in the Russian army would look at girls in Ukrainian villages as if they are just a piece of meat. And these girls sometimes were pregnant and became social outcasts because they didn't have a husband. And this is the topic of Shevchenko's poem, Katerina. So yeah, this is all to say that the history of Ukrainian literature is absolutely critical to understanding the present moment, not just our contemporary writers.
Yeah.
It's shocking sometimes because, you know, Shevchenko is the most popular name in Ukrainian literature. We all know his poems since childhood, since schools. But these days you reread some of the stuff and it's chilling how timely it is. It's if he could live in 2022 instead of 19th century, and every in each word resonates powerfully, which again brings us to the topic that what is happening now, unfortunately, it's just a continuation of the same old shit happening to us over and over again, because nobody dared to stop Russian colonialism.
And let's hope that this is the culmination of it. And once this is over, it will never come back. But Kate, we also wanted to ask you, we've been talking about this previously a lot, but, you know, a lot of people at the moment, a lot of kind of, I guess, Western audiences, Russian audiences as well, are perceiving us celebrating Ukrainian literature and culture as though it's some sort of attack on Russian culture. Or, you know, we've heard so many times sort of these discussions around Russophobia and you know, us basically, whenever we say, you know, maybe you should read beyond what you perceive to be Russian culture and try to read people who have been writing for a very long time in countries that have been oppressed by Russia, we tend to get a pushback, right, both from Western friends and, well, friends, and from I guess Russian people abroad and in Russia. I don't even know what they think and feel. But I was just wondering, have you come across this, and how do you sort of respond or react or feel about it?
Oh yeah, I've absolutely had to deal with this, and it's been infuriating, because you have people who celebrate these terms like the right to self-determination, cultural agency, yet they themselves cannot view Ukrainian culture as separate from the Russian culture, and it's absolutely mind-boggling. I can give example of dealing with members of the Russian art community, because I have published Russian writers in the past, and met with like Russian photographers, painters, and there's this old Ukrainian saying, yeah, that the question of the Russian liberal begins and ends with Ukraine, and this is something that I noticed, for example, meeting a Russian photographer, a friend of mine in Paris, a good guy. He's been going to pro-Ukrainian protests since the war started, as I understand. But I remember he was sitting with me in Paris on a cafe. And so he is anti-Putin. He is a member of LGBT community. And yet, you think very open-minded guy. And yet he says to me, Kate, I'm concerned about the discrimination against Russian speakers in Ukraine. And I think, what? What are you talking about? And I noticed some members of the Russian art community since the war began, they have to say, but we are not all bad. It is Putin's war. It is not our war. And I want to say it was not Putin in Bucha who raped children and burned entire families, and we need to talk about responsibility. I actually had an interview with a journalist today who asked me, do you have Russian friends and do you still speak with them? And I said, it's very simple. A friend of mine in my PhD program, she is Russian born, but grew up in the United States. And she said to me, Kate, she wrote me as soon as the war started. She said, I am horrified by what I am seeing. I have never been more ashamed to be Russian. Please tell me what I can do to help Ukrainians during this time. And this is the way every Russian should speak to their friends in Ukraine or Ukrainian diaspora and ask them, how can I help, instead of making it about them. This is what I told the journalist. I said, such people, such Russians, will be welcome at my table when this war is over, because I know that they understand the situation. And it's it's a little sad to see others who insist on victimizing themselves when Ukrainians are the victims here. And I think that what I want to say is there is a path to redemption, they need to understand it. It's very simple. And I hope that those in the Russian art community who understand this will step up and try to be like a force of nature amongst their colleagues to show them that they need to stop looking down on Ukrainians, to view them as like little Russians, quote unquote, and to respect this struggle. So,
100%.
It hasn't been the thing that just, was born with Putin. It's as a person who lived in Russia for almost a year, this is something that is, the whole culture, the whole even domestic interactions between Ukrainian and Russians are soaked into this very toxic conversations of just little brothers or whatever bullshit is there.
Or they can just get very toxic very quickly if you go in a direction, that I was talking to my parents today and they were also saying, of course, all of us have friends, Russian friends or friends in Russia, et cetera, et cetera. But, conversations can turn very sour very quickly. And the other thing I was just going to say, it's just mind-boggling to me how many questions we Ukrainians get from Western media about Russophobia and about the feelings of Russians right now. And I guess I know, Kate, this is time for you as well, but just to say to everyone, if you're here and if you're going to be, interviewing people who are Ukrainian in the future, just try to focus on the experiences of Ukrainians. We don't have the time to sit for hours and talk about the feelings and experiences of Russia in particular. So just be very aware of that, because it's actually, I get quite angry when I get asked that question, and I am aware that we're asking you that question right now. But just to say.
Yeah. But to quote one of my favorite viral posts that I'm self-quoting myself. Okay. So that I actually, it took me many years to get to this precise phrase about this topic, that phobia is irrational fear of something that's unlikely to cause harm, whereas Russian colonialism has been raping, killing, pillaging our lands for centuries. So that's not phobia. That's just wisdom, simple wisdom. So I think when people start talking about Russophobia and how, anything that is critical of Russia is suddenly Russophobia, and telling it to Ukrainian faces, this is just drives me nuts. Kate, can I ask you a very quick question?
Sure.
Still on... on Ukrainian language in general, especially since this is not your first language, not my first language either, but as someone who's observing how language is changing and the issue of language is changing dramatically in Ukraine, what is your perspective these days? Because I probably you also seen it As you know, Ukrainians, we stopped using Russian at some point, even Russian-speaking Ukrainians like myself. Mm-hmm. And we've never actually discussed it. Like, nobody discusses it at all. We just instantly felt like this is the only right thing to do. And for me personally, speaking Russian became so painful. And but what do you think of that? Do you, you know, you hear your friends switching to Ukrainian only, and what's your feeling about it? What's your thoughts on it?
Sure. So a lot of my friends are in the Ukrainian literature world, so they were always speaking Ukrainian. Like I said, my husband and his in-laws, they were predominantly speaking Russian before the war. And what I saw was they would speak both, of course, and in public always speak Ukrainian. And my brother-in-law, who is younger, when he was born, the grandparents said you must speak to him from the birth in Ukrainian. So his Ukrainian is much better than his Russian. And it's like, I think, a very normal situation in Ukraine before the war, that it's very easy to switch between both languages or to speak Surzhik, mixing both languages, especially in Chernivtsi. We have also like Romanian words that get mixed in. But I noticed that since the start of the war, even people who came of age in the Soviet times, where Russian was normalized, even they are switching to Ukrainian, which is absolutely incredible to me. Because this, as we understand, for many people, this language right now is associated with the murder of children, rape of women and girls, the executions of citizens. And this is not a language, it's a language of violence for many people right now, and they don't want to be associated with it. Very interesting for me because actually I started studying Russian in America before I ever started to learn Ukrainian. And my Russian teacher, he was half Ukrainian, half Russian, from Kharkiv. And in those days, he said to me the language of Russian, it's he always wants to separate it from Putin. Yeah, they're saying it's the language of Pushkin and not Putin. Obviously, that has changed. Even for people like him who have a Russian heritage, he doesn't want to speak it. He doesn't want any association with it. And it's not that, going back to this question of Russophobia, it's not that Russian will become like an illegal language, that you will go to jail, like this ridiculous Russian Today video that was circulating where someone had the Nabokov text and then police come to the door, you know. It's not that. Just like when we take the Pushkin statues out of Uzhhorod or Mukachevo, or Ternopil, it's not that you are not allowed to read Pushkin anymore. It's that really it's this unfortunate, horrific time in Ukrainian history has propelled people to understand that Ukrainian culture is so rich, beautiful, that it's under attack right now, that the very existence of Ukrainian language and culture is at stake. So that we should not take it for granted, that we have to celebrate our literary heroes, our history, our language.
And you posted, Kate, you always post terrific stuff on Twitter, but something that I remember from some days ago about Pushkin and other... is that Kitty on the background?
Sorry, it's my cat. She's getting...
That's a traditional Ukrainian home, always with a cat. Always with a cat. And I remember you posted something about the statues of Russian writers being taken down in Ukraine. And this is not because we hate good Russian literature, but because you always also look through those texts and now you see them through colonialism lenses, and suddenly you see all that hate and Ukrainian xenophobia dripping all over those texts. But not only Ukrainians, anyone who's not Russian, really.
Yeah.
And this is something that is really hard to process, and you cannot understand why in the hell I would allow my streets to be named after someone who hated Ukraine, right? Mm-hmm. There are statues just being in front of me. So yeah, this is
and you know, our threshold of what we believed was acceptable has changed, I think, since the beginning, right? Like, for so long, I don't know for what reasons, or probably if I thought longer could come up with some, but it's just also, I think we have our patience of being silent has basically been, I mean, every action has a reaction, right? Everything happens for a reason and because of something else. And so I guess our tolerance and our, as I was saying, threshold of what is acceptable changed drastically 40 plus days ago. So thank you, Kate, for talking about this. But I wanted to ask you, everyone probably asks you this question always and forever, but we wanted to ask you for your top five Ukrainian author book recommendations to read. Maybe three, five, however many you want to. I know you've shared a couple already, but this is the time for everyone to get their pens ready to write them down if people want to know more about Ukraine and Ukrainian culture and literature.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I actually was asked this question earlier and I joked that I published so many of them and tried to get so many of them recognized that I don't want to make anyone jealous by saying I have a favorite. I love all of them. But yeah, if I choose, I really encourage everyone to read the poetry of Luba Yakimchuk. Her poetry collection, Apricots of Donbass, was published by Lost Horse Press recently. And she, perhaps some of you saw, if you watched the Grammys, she recited some of her poetry from this collection to the music of John Legend. And it was quite emotional to see it. And she talks about how she and her family became internally displaced people in Luhansk region and how war affected them. And she says, she speaks with such a strong femininity and yet fragility and strength at the same time in a way that, yeah, it's very feminine and beautiful. And I absolutely love her work. She also is a screenwriter. If you want to look, she made the script for this Budinok Slovo documentary, which is just another topic altogether about the executed Renaissance generation of Ukrainian writers who were murdered by Stalin's NKVD. But that's another whole topic. I have to say, I really also love Yuri Andruhovich's book, The Moskoviad, which was translated many years ago by Vitaly Charnetsky. And this book is about a Ukrainian writer at the Gorky Institute in Moscow, who is in Moscow at the end of the Soviet Empire. And it's kind of like phantasmagoric and crazy. And he wants nothing more than to get out of this sick city and get back to his beloved Ukraine. And he is being followed by like KGB guys and it's absolutely incredible, and I won't spoil the ending, but you will smile when you read it, given the current context. It's very much a book about like liberation of the Ukrainian mind, because Andruhovich was part of this Bubabu group in the 90s, a poetry group. They were pro-Ukrainian, promoting Ukrainian language when nobody wanted to speak it, and he's absolutely incredible. And another book I can recommend is Absolute Zero by Artem Chekh. He joined the army in 2015. He served from 2015 to 2016, and he started to write his impressions on Facebook, and this kind of became a diary while he was serving in the army. And it's very interesting because he is part of this like intellectual elite from Kyiv. He was participating in Maidan. He spoke only Ukrainian. And he goes into the army and he sees a lot of the people who enlisted in the army are working class guys. They didn't go to Maidan. They're speaking Russian, but they also love Ukraine. And it kind of transforms his perceptions of what is a patriot and who is ready to defend this country. And it's absolutely he avoids any like romanticization of war. There's no like descriptions of heroic battles. It's very kind of banal, but in the best way. It's really like hyper realistic portrait of the beginning of the war. So yeah, those would be like three of my top recommendations. I can go on and on. If you look, oi, Morka, sorry, she's knocking stuff over now. so yeah, if you want, you can look on Literary Hub. I wrote an article about top 10 books. I also mentioned like Vasil Makhno, Andriy Lubka, Olesya Hromichuk, this book, Our Others, by Olesya Kromenchuk. It's about this cultural diversity of Ukraine and minority groups. She went around interviewing them. It's kind of like an anthropological text. It's really, really interesting. I also, there's a piece in Coda Story. I speak a lot about this Lost Horse Press series. I encourage all of you, if you love poetry, even if you don't, buy the Ukrainian poetry series from Lost Horse Press. They publish Yuri Izdrik, Serhiy Zhedan, Luba Yakimchuk, Boris, Natasha Hersonsky. Really, there are so many great Ukrainian books out there, and we don't have time to name them all.
Thank you so much. I've been genuinely writing them down, which embarrassingly have to admit that I haven't read them all, but it's I've been making notes.
You will have to, you know, come back, and we definitely will talk more, because no way Ukrainian literature deserves just 1 hour. And by the way, for rest of the folks, because Ukrainian Spaces is a recorded conversation, and it's now also lives as an Apple and Spotify podcast, you can check one of our earlier episodes on the role of women in Ukrainian literature with brilliant Sasha Dovzhuk. It was a very empowering conversation as well, and she dropped some names there as well for you to pick up. I think we'll have to wrap up because Murka also needs your attention. And by the way, the one of the reasons why we decided on this time, because 5 p.m., 6 p.m. Ukraine is the time when I feed my cat, and afterwards he's not so vocal anymore, so this is kind of a a place when you can do such stuff as spaces without him screaming. But I wanted to ask you some questions that we always ask everyone. Sure. Because I know there are a lot of journalists are here as well, and they come and they listen to the recording. And for us, it's very important for them to know what frustrates Ukrainians when it comes to coverage of Ukraine these days. So maybe there's one or a couple of things that you really wanted to highlight and ask people not to do it.
Rather than say what I don't want people to do, I would say, please do read more of the history books, read more of the literature, because it's very clear who does and who doesn't. As I said earlier, Harvard's Ukrainian Research Institute has launched an incredible series of books. For example, Oksana Kiss's book on women in the Gulag, Ukrainian women in the Gulag. It's a rather large book. Those who love Svetlana Alexievich would absolutely enjoy this book, where she gathers all this archival data, testimonies, and shows this horror that Ukrainian women survived through. They also published poetry about Babi Yar. They published the work of Stanislav Isayev, which he wrote before he was captured and imprisoned in Izolatsiya. So they are really trying to do everything they can to enrich the historical and cultural understanding of the English-speaking world in Ukraine. So there is material out there. Do not be lazy. Go out and search for it, because you absolutely can educate yourself. It's not impossible. Of course, it's better to know Ukrainian, but there is more and more, thanks to translators, more material for you to begin to understand and appreciate Ukraine.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for stopping by. It was an immense pleasure having you. And as we often say with Valeria, one of the main reasons why we launched these Ukrainian spaces is for Ukrainians to express themselves the way they want, but also because they were kind of therapy sessions for everyone in Ukraine and who's Ukrainian. Because every time you go in and you feel maybe crappy, and then after that conversation, it feels a bit better. And thank you for that. That's definitely the case for today as well.
Well, thank you. It was nice. Yeah, it was great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Valeria. Slava Ukraini.
Heroine Slava. And buy the books and read them.
Ukrainian books. Yep, please do.